I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, sort of. And you're listening to The Functional Nerds, episode number 195. And John?
Yes.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going fine. It's going great. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com.
Did we get a Parsec Award or a nomination?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
And my name is John Anelio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanelio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanelio. And very excited today. We are joined by James S.A. Corey. And I think most people in our community know that James S.A. Corey is the pen name for Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. They are the authors of the Expanse series of books out there, including Leviathan Wakes. And the new book is coming out in June, I believe. What is the title of the new book, Daniel?
It is called Cibola Burn, and it comes out on the 17th of June.
Sweet. So thank you guys, and Ty, thank you for coming on as well. Appreciate this. Someone had tweeted me and said, you know, when James is on the show, there's going to be like this echo effect. It's going to be really weird. So how have you guys, been at, because I think within the community, people know that it's two of you guys writing this, but what has your experience been at conventions and things like that when two people show up for James S.A. Corey? Daniel. Of course, Ty started up. I knew that was going to happen. I'm like, this is going to happen all the time.
No, generally speaking, we haven't had anything weird go on at conventions. When we show up and introduce ourselves, most people kind of knew what they were getting into. And most of what we get is the joke on Twitter where we talk to each other on Twitter and people say, ha, you're talking to yourself. And we go, yes, I've never heard that joke before. That's a great new joke.
When you go to a convention, they often ask you, what name do you want on your badge? Do you both put James S.A. Corey and just screw with people?
No. We put our names. Okay. And that way, when people walk by, they don't actually know who the hell we are. That's kind of nice in its way, I guess.
Is Ty really, really shy?
Not at all.
Okay. I was just curious because you're just sitting back there. You're relaxing. You're laid back, and you're not saying anything. So I wasn't sure if you were playing. You know, if you were like a Chinese gold farmer on World of Warcraft, or what was going on there. So,
well, sleepy.
I understand. Yes.
Well, I have tons of questions because I'm a big fan of the books, and there's lots of cool stuff going on for you guys. But before we get into all that, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Daniel, why don't you give us your pick of the week first?
Okay. If I had to pick one kind of nerdy thing to really recommend to everybody, if folks haven't been following Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy, the second book just came out. The first one is Annihilation. The second one is Authority. The third one will be coming out later in the summer. Called Acceptance, and Jeff Vandermeer is really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing with these books, I think, is really fascinating, and it looks like it's actually starting to break into the mainstream a little bit, too. He's done a bunch of really profoundly weird stuff that has been surrealistic and cool and sort of existed only within a very narrow range of folks, and the Southern Reach trilogy is, I don't know, it's like nothing I've read before. My shorthand for it is, it's like if you reinvented H.P. Lovecraft for the present day, but without the racism and with good writing. I don't know if Jeff would characterize it that way, but it's got that really wonderful sense of being weird and creepy and ominous without, any anything necessarily coming forward and going boo or any cats jumping out of the locker. And it's science fiction and it's horror and it's literature and it's great. And I would recommend it to anybody who was in the mood for that.
I got to talk with Jeff over on the SF Signal podcast. And you were talking about he's done some really profound and kind of weird and creepy things. He has a plan. He wants to do this collection, and but the problem is it's like 2 million words, and he says I don't know of anybody who will publish it.
Yeah, I was in his weird anthology, the one that he and Ann did, mm-hmm. that had like a story from literally everybody. They're I think some of the most ambitious and interesting editors in the field right now, and I'm delighted to see them get successful and be recognized.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything they won't touch. I don't think there's, you know, when people will talk about what is and what isn't on the table, they don't even have a table.
Yeah, yeah, they're very cool, very cool. Ty, do you have a pick this week, either a book or a movie or an album or something that you're into the past couple weeks?
I'm one of the 7 people in America who admits to really having had fun at Godzilla. That would probably be my pick. I had a great time. It awoke my inner 11-year-old that grew up watching Sunday afternoon. It was Saturday matinee. That's what it was when I was a kid. You watch cartoons in the morning, and then at noon, Saturday matinee would come on, and it was always a Toho monster movie. And this just took me right back to being an 11-year-old watching Godzilla just lay a beat down on a couple other monsters. I had a great time.
Do you remember Ultraman?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I loved Ultraman.
Cool. Well, I've seen a lot of people talk pretty positively about the Godzilla movie. Like anything, it probably isn't going to meet everybody's expectations. But I know the people who are kind of Godzilla fans that I know, monster fans, seem to dig it quite a bit. So that's another one I have to go get. So
I definitely want to see it. And you didn't did it wipe away the visions of Matthew Broderick?
It did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it replaced Matthew Broderick with Kick-Ass.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Nice.
Cool. My pick this week is going to be an iPhone app. It's called Hum. Hum is an app for songwriters. And what Hum does is it's kind of like Evernote, but what you can do, which is really neat, is it lets you write your lyrics down in there. So if you're working on a vocal song, it lets you write your lyrics down in there. It also has lets you record audio files right into it. So, you know, if you're coming up with like little riffs or little melodies or whatever, you can have your lyrics and your audio in the same little file. And then it has another section for notes. So if you want to, you know, give little notes on it, but it doesn't have to be intermixed with the lyrics. You can have them separate. And then the last thing it does, which is really cool, is you can add, say, what key it's in. And if you're a guitar player like me, if you want to put in that it's in a different tuning, which I use a lot of different tunings, so you can put what tuning it's in and what capo position is. Because if you're like me, sometimes you come up with these cool riffs where you're in open G tuning with a capo on a third fret, but then you don't listen to the thing again for a year, and you're like, how did I even play this? I don't even remember. So really cool little app, only $2. It's called Hum. And if you're a songwriter, it is definitely worth checking out. So that is my pick this week. Patrick, what's yours?
My pick is James Sutter and Paizo and Pathfinder.
Cool.
The reason mm-hmm. being, when we had James on, we geeked out and mm-hmm. we talked about a lot of stuff. And then I had him on SF Signal and we geeked out about Pathfinder. And I was telling him that I have started playing Pathfinder and that I had bought their beginner's box, which reminds me so much of the Dungeons & Dragons red box from my youth, my misspent youth. And that it was just blowing me away. It was very nostalgic. I really enjoyed the beginner's box. And he's like, oh, let me, I'm going to send you something. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, okay, cool. And I got to tell you, John, I'm blown away. James sent me, through Paizo, he sent me 3 hardcover books for Pathfinder. Cool. He sent me the core rulebook, the bestiary, and the Inner Sea World Guide, and I'm just blown away that they would send that to me. I thought that was really kind of them. The books are absolutely awesome. They're huge. They're massive. There's the spines for you to see on the video that our listeners can't see. There's the really cool covers. I was just blown away that they would send me those. And so I really appreciate that. I want to thank James. I want to thank Paizo and Pathfinder Rocks.
Cool. Cool. Very good. Very good. Well, you know, let's get right into it because I know time might have to leave a little early. So first question that I got to ask is that The Expanse has been picked up for a 10-episode season for the Sci-Fi Channel. And, yeah. So congratulations on that. And so, Ty, what, you know, what I want to ask is that we have a lot of writers that have come on the show, and sometimes when they get their shows optioned, and so yours is just going right to a 10-episode season, not a pilot, so that's very exciting. But the thing that I wanted to know is because sometimes authors are very involved and sometimes they're not that involved in the actual show creation. So, Ty, what is your involvement in the show?
We're way more involved than probably any of the other writers I know have been in the past. We're producers on the show, which often is sort of a meaningless title in these sorts of things. But in our case, we actually have been in the writing room since the beginning, working with the showrunners to develop the spine of the first season. Danielle and I are going to be getting a script assignment, so we'll be writing one of the episodes in the first season and hopefully beyond that as well. But the big thing is just to be there right from the beginning when they're beating out the story. It would be a very different story if we hadn't been. There's a number of things that were proposed as changes that I think we were able to make impassioned arguments against and that are not going to be changed now. There's been a meaningful effect of us being in there. Having said that, though, of course, we are in the room doing this stuff with 3 of probably the top guys in the field. So, you know, I mean, it's not like we're running that room. the showrunner, Naren Shankar, he ran Grimm, he ran CSI, he ran, he was on Star Trek Next Generation for a long time. So this is a guy who has an enormous background in the field. And then the 2 guys who wrote the pilot and are executive producers and are writing a bunch of the episodes are Hawk Osby and Mark Fergus, who wrote Iron Man and Children of Men. And I mean, so, you know, we've been there, we've been able to give our opinion on how things should change, but, you know, we're still in the room with some guys who really understand the medium better than we do. So it's been really interesting to do the process with them.
I'm curious, Ty, is there like a Sci-Fi Channel offices, and inside those offices is where you guys are? Or are you separate? Are you in some sort of production company offices somewhere else?
Yeah.
Can you introduce me to Jamie Murray?
No, I'm 1 degree of removed from Jamie Murray. J.P. Nichol, who was a writer on Warehouse 13 and in fact wrote the series finale episode, is a friend of mine, and so I keep asking him to give me an introduction, but so far he has failed to do that.
That's not a good friend.
He's actually kind of a terrible friend. We're actually at the Alcon offices. Alcon is the production company that is producing the show, that ultimately owns the show. We're working in their offices developing it right now.
Cool. Daniel, what's your experience been like so far with the TV show?
I've been out in LA for the last 3 weeks. I'm at home right now visiting my family, and then I'm going back out on Monday. And, you know, it's weird. You know, my experience of television so far is definitely an N=1 study. But the folks who are playing in the writing room are really, really smart. And we have shot down some changes, and we've also had them suggest some changes that I think were really solid and really a good idea. And watching the story that we made be translated into this new medium and into this new form with these new constraints and and become a different thing but still stay the same story has been really cool. And so far, the stuff that I think was really the most important to me is the stuff that's been really most important to them. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy, and I'm looking forward to, you know, the casting director is talking to people, and we're talking with folks who are going to be designing what the thing looks like, and that's really exciting.
I'm curious, guys, and maybe Daniel can answer this. I'm sure you have a process for writing the books, and you know you guys have a conversation, and you decide this is where it's going. And do you have to reveal that to the television folks a little bit? Like, you have a book coming out right now. Are you planning another book after that, and you already have ideas of where stuff's going to go? So when you talk about changes and you have to shoot down some of their stuff, is it because it's like, well, you want to kill this guy, but really that guy's going to do something in an upcoming book? I mean, is that kind of how it goes?
Yeah, that kind of thing does come up.
Okay.
And you know, that's fine. You know, I don't mind giving spoilers to the guys in the room. That's fine. But yeah, there are some change. There are some characters in book one you can't really change a whole lot because they're going to show up in book four.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, to sort of piggyback on what Patrick was asking, you know, whenever we have people that are co-writers, I'm always very curious on how it works, because we've had like Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert on, and they literally alternate chapters, and we've had some people where they write one author writes one character, another writes the other. So how do you guys break up your writing duty when you're writing your novels? How does that process work for you?
Who are you asking, John?
Ty, how would that work for you? How does it start with you guys?
We outline together. We split up the point of view characters. We each write the chapters in those point of view characters and then hand off and edit the other person's chapters. So that's pretty much what we've done for four books now.
Do you ever find yourself, Ty, going, you know, wow, this Daniel, this is sounding a lot like you and not like James. We need to kind of tweak this.
No, that's never a conscious thing. That does happen. But it happens.
That's okay.
It happens more organically than that.
Okay.
In the process of us writing something and then both of us then editing it, and the book goes through three edits before it ever hits our publisher, and then it gets edited again, of course, when the editor sends his notes back. So the fact that we've done three edits before it even goes out, really, by the time that third edit is done, we have a hard time remembering who wrote which line. So it's really organic. At no point does anyone ever say, this doesn't sound like a Jimmy line. This sounds like a Daniel line. That never happened.
How do you fight?
Never.
Never. I mean, there's never a clash where you guys just say, no, what the fuck are you thinking? No, we're not doing this.
No. There is sometimes the thing where one of us will say, well, maybe we could do this. And the other one says, yeah, but you know what would be even cooler? Because imagine if we did this. And whoever can come up with the best visual pretty much wins.
Okay.
So, Ty, do you need to take that?
Yeah, Ty, if you need to, I know you need to get going at some point.
No, just give me a couple. I mean, it'll just be a couple minutes.
Okay.
And then I'll take
it. That's well, let me ask, you know, sort of a related question, because you guys also wrote a Star Wars book, Honor Among Thieves. So is your writing process for that, because this is obviously not your world, was that a similar one, Ty? Did you guys go about it in the same way?
No, that one we actually alternated chapters, but wrote writing from the same point of view. So that was a little different. And then the other thing is there's just a lot of cooks in that kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
With Daniel and I writing the Expanse stuff, it's my world. I created it. Daniel, it's at this point, it's his world too, because he's helped guide the development of it for 4 years now, or even longer. So it's our thing, and we get to do whatever we want. And when we send a book in, the editor might have minor changes, but they're never going to say, oh, no, you can't use that planet. Mm-hmm. That's not even an option for them. Whereas in Star Wars, you can write something and then they can come back and go, oh no, don't use this race, don't use this planet, we want you to add this other thing, which is just not a thing that we were used to before that. And I have a great deal of respect for the people who can consistently turn out high quality work, and there are a lot of them who can consistently turn out high quality work even with those additional constraints.
So what you're saying is that now, if you ever do a toy line for the Expanse series, that might drive what characters you use and what areas, because you know you need to sell the new toy.
we will never be driving that. If that may happen, we're not going to be the ones running that thing.
Now, Daniel, let me ask you: how do you, news had come out kind of recently that a lot of the Star Wars expanded universe is like kind of got decanonized now, and so is your book in that canon? Do you care? Like, what's your feelings? Because now with the new kind of launch, there's books coming out by John Jackson Miller and Paul S. Kemp and Kevin Hearn and James Luceno. Like, those are the first four books that are going to be definitely canon. And, you know, your book only came out a few months ago. It really wasn't that long ago. So how does all this kind of canon business affect you, Dan?
It doesn't affect me at all. Canonicity and authenticity and whether something is within the continuity or outside the continuity, that's a story about the story. That's mm-hmm. a very meta conversation. Mm-hmm. I grew up reading Star Trek novels.
Ooh, that I love were, them.
They were great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of them were kind of crappy, but those were kind of great. and I think there's a... I have this thing about the difference between a continuity and a mythos where, mm-hmm. you know, Batman stories can't all exist in the same place. You know, you mm-hmm. can't have the Nolan Batman and the Adam West Batman, and which one of those is authentic? You know, which Joker is Mark Hamill's Joker, the real Joker?
Yes.
Is Jack Nicholson's Joker, the real Joker?
No.
Is Heath Ledger, the real mm-hmm. Joker? There's not a real Joker. I mean, there's not one real Joker. There's this kind of cloud of Jokers, and they're all legitimate. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we see these big franchises start to have these different iterations and start to have these different versions of themselves, what we're seeing is a project, a story, start to move from a continuity to a mythos. And I'm comfortable with that. I like that now. Yeah. I like having all those different ones.
Yeah, I mean, nobody argues about which Hercules story is canon. Mm-hmm. Hercules, as Daniel says, is a mythos, and we tell a lot of different Hercules stories, but they're all valid Hercules stories.
Even the Disney one?
All of them.
Even the Disney one. Mm-hmm.
Even the Disney one. I mean, what we're seeing right now is sort of the growing pains, I think, as people sort of loosen their grip on something that is becoming a mythos and trying to keep it the small personal thing that it was when they first latched onto it. Which is, it's totally legitimate. I'm not downplaying those people's concerns and emotional states, but the fact is, it's never going to be the thing it was when we first latched onto it, and you know, and successful stories never are. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the stories that stay exactly the same through generation after generation tend to be stories that didn't succeed. I mean, how many different iterations of Great Expectations do we have? You know, mm-hmm. dozens at this point, and all of them have something to say, but Great Expectations is a classic of our mythology now at this point.
Or Christmas Carol. Christmas Carol's another good one.
Christmas Carol. We had a million, I mean, we have Bill Murray doing comedy versions of A Christmas Carol, and that's okay. His version is just as valid as anybody else's, because it's no longer just that one little story that Dickens wrote, you know. And that's because it's successful. Things that never ever change is because the only people who read them are dusty college professors, and so it gets to stay small on the same.
I will throw out there.
Now I wanted to
hold on, John. Hold on. From the fans' point of view, from the fans' point of view, when I've been thinking about the Star Wars thing for a long time, because as soon as they announced that Disney bought it, I said that what they're going to do is they're going to throw out everything that's been done, because when the books started, when they started doing, you know, and they did the Thrawn trilogy and they moved forward, everybody was talking about how George Lucas said, I'm not going to do anything after Return of the Jedi. So go ahead, have fun, write your stories. It's fine. We're never going to be able to do that. I'm going to do a prequel series. And so he kind of set the stage and they let him write all these books and they created this expanded universe. The difference between the Star Wars expanded universe and the Star Trek expanded universe is that all along Paramount and CBS said the books don't count.
And why does that matter?
It matters from a fan's point of view. Because for me, it's like, okay, these are really great stories. They keep the story alive. They keep the mythos alive. But quote unquote, the movies are the only official thing because that's all they had at the time.
Who are they to tell you what you can and can't like? Well, are you going to stop liking Mara Jade now?
No. But what I'm saying is I loved the Star Wars books, but they set it up. They set it up as saying this is going to be canon.
Wait.
Sure.
Do you not love the Star Wars books now?
No, I do. But I'm pissed. But what I'm pissed off at is that they said this is the way it's going to be, and then when they decided to change it, they said, "Oh no, we're going to pull the rug out, and everything that we built no longer counts." So
who the hell are they to say what counts?
They are Disney, and Disney can apparently do whatever they want. And so now what we're going to have is we're going to have a Han Solo X-Men crossover because they also own Marvel.
But you're still going to like Mara Jade. You're still going to enjoy the stories with Mara Jade in.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have more authority over what your experience is than they do. They don't get to tell you what counts to you.
No, but
they don't get to tell you what you enjoy.
But it's
what they get to do is what they get to either say it has our little stamp of approval or it doesn't. But were you really reading this so that you could have their stamp of approval?
No. I wasn't. No. But what I was doing was I was reading this from the standpoint of George Lucas saying, yes, this is canon. This is the way it moved forward. And now they're saying, no, it's not canon. We're going to delete that. We're going to retcon it. We're going to pull a Marvel on you. Okay? Well, Captain America never came back from World War II. It was a different guy in the costume. That's what they're saying to me.
But again, I hear the point you're making, but again, why does that matter? Why do we care? I've seen a million different Batman movies. Some of them I like, some of them I don't like, none of which actually go together. And none of it affects my perception of Batman. And the fact that the Thrawn trilogy is now not canon doesn't change the fact that it was a great trilogy and that we liked it. I mean, this idea of canonicity is one that I really have a hard time wrapping my head around because... It almost doesn't matter what those people say is the universe because there is no one universe. We all have a different version of that. You probably read a bunch of expanded universe stuff. I haven't. So your version of the expanded universe is different from mine because we haven't read the same books in it. But it doesn't change either of our enjoyment of it. People keep saying, oh, have you read these particular Star Wars books? And I'll have to say, no, I haven't. And they're like, oh, it changes everything about the series. And I believe that's true. I believe that's true. But the version of that universe that exists in my head does not include that stuff. And it's okay. It's okay. It's still a perfectly valid version and I still enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you get the people who are saying, oh, only the Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes is the real Conan Doyle, if you like that stuff by Nicholas Meyer or the stuff with Benedict Cumberbatch, that's not real. You know, fuck them.
Well, I guess it comes down to it's like if you are a fan of the Punisher in Marvel and you have read all the comics and you get really excited because they've made a movie and you go to see the movie and it's Dolph Lundgren and Louis Gossett Jr.,
yeah, that happened.
It's just a major disappointment.
But it doesn't. But I think what they're saying, Patrick, is that it doesn't invalidate the comics, though. It's just you can ignore what you like. I don't know. Like I don't love the Star Wars prequels, and I tend to kind of ignore them because I still love the original movies and a lot of the books. And
you're
I don't.
Just saying you don't like the movies?
No, I don't. No one does. Like it's...
I'm one of the few people who does not enjoy the new Star Trek movies. The J.J. Abrams Star Treks, I have not enjoyed those. I don't like them at all. And I know that that's the new official continuity, for the movies, but it doesn't change the fact that Wrath of Khan is still one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that they basically gone back in time and erased those events and made Khan this other guy, and I mean, the fact that they've done that and that's now the official version changes nothing about the fact that when I pop in my Wrath of Khan DVD and watch that movie, that I have a great time. They're telling me what is official changes nothing about what I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And when they do that in comics where they're like, oh, it's going to be all issue ones now, we're completely going back to the beginning, that doesn't change the fact that, like, when I first read Spider-Man, the first appearance of the Punisher and the Jackal, and Spider-Man's fighting the Punisher, and then turns out the Punisher's not actually a bad guy, even after they've been fighting, those comics still exist in my brain, and I still love them, even if they go back and retcon that so that never happened. So yeah. I guess I don't place this importance on the creator telling me what I'm supposed to feel more than what I actually feel and the things that I enjoy.
Of my friend, I can say only this.
I know everybody's experience of that is different.
Yeah, of my friend, I can say only this. Of all the souls I've encountered in my travels, his was the most human.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
And if you don't tear up at that moment, you are a
human. Well, you know, I did want to ask you guys, getting back to The Expanse a bit, you know, you guys have some short fiction that you guys are writing, a few novellas within the Expanse universe. Now, was that because you guys had more, like, smaller stories that you wanted to tell? Was that from your publisher wanting to put more stuff out there? Ty, what was the sort of, what made those novellas and short fiction come into being?
It's both. The very first one that we wrote, I think we actually wrote it to have something to take to a writer's retreat. We were going to this writer's retreat, and you had to bring something with you to be critiqued there, and we didn't really have any new stuff. That wasn't part of, like, the novel series, which you're never going to have meaningful critiques on, like, the third book in a novel series. I mean, it's too late by that point. Mm-hmm. So we sat down and wrote this little short story, Butcher of Anderson Station, and took that to the retreat. And if we had never sold it, it would not have been a big deal. We were just doing it to hang out and play. But it turned out that Orbit wanted it. They said, no, if you got it, give it to us. So we gave it to them, and then when we signed our second book contract with them, they said, we really like this, and we want you to do a lot more of it. And they bought 5 novellas from us. So from then on, the novellas were under contract. But
nice.
It was kicked off by this sort of just random first thing we did as a gag.
Mm. Now, Daniel, are the novellas, are they print as well as ebook, or are they just ebook?
They're just ebook right now. When we have enough of them to actually justify putting them all together in print, we're probably going to do that. I can't see why we wouldn't concatenate those. But right now, there's only like 2 short stories and 2 novellas, so that we're gonna need to do a little more work first.
Okay, so it'll be like sort of an omnibus kind of a thing, or an anthology of a bunch all in one shot.
Yeah, a little collection of short stories and novellas from the world.
Cool.
Right, because we have one more out there that we did for I always forget about that one. The one we did for Jonathan Strong for his Edge of Infinity anthology.
We did an excellent story for that.
So Drive is in print. That's the only one of those stories so far that's actually in print.
Cool. Now, Daniel, I did want to ask you a question because we did talk a little bit about comics, and you do write the Game of Thrones graphic novel. So,
which I have reviewed on Kirkus positively.
And I appreciate that.
Yes, they've been on Kirkus reviews.
Now, how does that work? Because obviously it's George R. R. Martin's world, and you know, with comics writing, because you know, I guess it's the Marvel school where the art would come first, but this is on a pre-existing novel series. So, how do you work into that process of creating those graphic novels?
It's a really interesting process. It's a really interesting project. My job is to take the outline we made when I started doing this. We did the breakdown of what was going to be in each of the episodes and each of the issues, and then take what George wrote and find ways to simplify that and make art and get visuals that give the information where the exposition used to be, and then hand that to the artist, Tommy Patterson, And then he does the art part, and it all gets put together. What's weird about it is it's the only job I have where it's my job to be invisible.
Mm.
I mean, nobody is coming to this project to see Daniel Abraham's take on Game of Thrones. That would be dumb. They want to see Tommy's art and George's story, and my job is to kind of intermediate between those two with as light a hand as I possibly can have. So, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I do, I take the dialogue from the books. There's not a whole lot of my language in the comic books. It's almost all George. And a lot of times when I'm telling Tommy how to draw a particular scene or a landscape, I will quote what's in the book and say, okay, here's what George said about it. Go. But it's... The adaptation gig is very different from writing something of my own. The adaptation gig is very much like trying to be invisible.
But I will say this:
now, John,
they're very rich, dense books. They really do capture the prose books, I think, much better than the HBO show.
Well, I'm not doing the HBO show. That one of the things that was interesting about this was we didn't have rights to the show. I can't take the decisions they made and use them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have more room than they do, and I have, in some ways, a higher budget than they do, because it takes as much ink to do a massive battle scene with a cast of thousands of really small little drawn characters. You don't have to pay the extras for that. You know, it's the same ink.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we can do that the show couldn't.
Exactly. And you have more space to do stuff in.
And we have more room.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, would you like to see the Expanse series get the graphic novel treatment?
Sure. Everybody tells us sci-fi comics don't work.
God, they do. They absolutely do.
But we've heard that from a lot of people. But when we were writing Leviathan Wakes, everybody told us sci-fi books don't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of just kind of roll along, and if somebody comes along and wants to do stuff, we let them do it and see what happens. Although at this point, if there is a graphic novel of The Expanse, it will probably be produced by Sci-Fi Channel or Alcon.
Oh, okay.
Because they won't have the rights to do that. Yeah.
Which means essentially Dynamite.
Yeah.
Dynamite?
I don't know that.
Dynamite? Dynamite? You could do worse than Dynamite.
Yeah. Now, Dynamite and Image are doing most of the... Image is doing a lot of sci-fi comics, Ty. So if you like comics, go look at what Image is doing. They're doing a lot of really cool different stuff. But Dynamite does a lot of the tie-ins.
Hmm. Cool. Yes, they do Saga too, right? Image is Saga, right?
Yep.
I think that's great. Well, Daniel and Ty, I think we've taken up enough of your time for one afternoon. Thank you so much for coming on the show. So can you give the release date and the title of the new book that's coming out one more time? Because I don't want to butcher the name of the new book coming out. So Daniel, what's the name of the book and when's it coming out again?
The new book is Cibola Burn, and it comes out on June 17th.
And do you have any other projects that you want to let our listeners know about that they can go check out?
There's this TV show.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
we're hoping that'll be... There may be some advertising about that before it comes out. We're hoping.
And who knows, if it's a hit, maybe Ty will get to meet Jamie Murray.
Yeah, that would be awesome. and we also have the book tour coming up. I'm not sure when your podcast will go up, but...
About two weeks.
Okay, in 2 weeks we will be on our West Coast book tour. And you guys will be up. The podcast will be up after Comic Con, then, or after Phoenix Comic Con. So
yes.
We should probably not bother talking about that.
Yeah, but so you're going to be doing a West Coast book tour then. Any plans to come out to the East?
Just as soon as our publisher tells us we're going out to the East, we will be going out to the East.
any plans to be in the Denver area?
Yeah, yes. We're going to be. One part of the signing tour is Tattered Cover.
Oh,
and I think that's the 18th.
I love Tattered Cover.
We're also going to be guests of honor at Mile High Con this year.
So,
cool.
Dudes,
cool,
we're going to hang out. We are so going to hang out. Mile High Con is my con now. I live here.
Cool.
It's a good con.
Do you know which Tattered Cover you're going to be at?
I can find out. Hold on.
Yeah, there's the main one and the Highlands Ranch one, and more than likely you guys are at the main one, which is off of is downtown. But that's awesome.
Sounds right.
Yeah, I didn't know that you guys were going to be there. So that's on the 18th. And then Mile High Con, I think, is a great con. I love Mile High Con at this point. Maybe.
Yeah, we're going to be at Highland Ranch.
Oh, you are going to be at Highlands Ranch.
Yeah,
okay.
At this point, Mile High Con is the con I have been to the most times, even more than Bubonic Con, I think, because I've missed a couple of Bubonic Cons, which is the Albuquerque Con. So.
Well, that's it.
My high is almost like a home con for me at this point.
I'm going to tell Rose that you guys have to be on the podcast with me because we do a live podcast recording there.
Cool.
Very good. Well, guys, thanks. So good luck with the new book and good luck with the TV show so everyone can go and check all that stuff out. Once again, for me, just check out my website, johnanilio.com, and follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick is atfmb.com. You can follow me on Twitter at atfmb. Patrick, anything else you want to mention before we get going?
My God.
All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.